Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I was sifting through the Open Floor emails all day today. We got some great emails from our listeners at openfloormail@gmail.com. But there was a recurring theme, and people keep kind of telling me they feel a little more edge to my voice lately. They think that maybe I'm a little more confrontational, that I come at you a little bit harder than I used to. And you know what, Andrew? New season, new Ben, okay? I have basically had it with some of your insane takes. I'm not going to give you the leverage, the leeway to go out on some of these crazy limbs. I'm going to call it like I see it. And I expect the same from you, okay? This is 2017-18 Open Floor. Let's get real open with it.
For the record, I don't want a new Ben. I want exactly the same Golliver that we've had for the last 2 years. You're great. And me, I'll admit that every now and then I bounce around a little bit. But for the most part, because we had a couple people calling me out for ridiculous takes, for the most part, the last month has been more ridiculous because we don't have actual basketball to talk about. So neither one of us have seen any of the teams that we're speculating about. So that's probably a good way to lead into our first real preview of the season. Last week, I realized that we hadn't done like more of a traditional preview with MVP picks and different.
No, that's a great point. This is our first real preview podcast after 17 fake preview podcasts. I mean, we have done so much preview stuff. We've gone down to the granular levels. We've taken every question that people could possibly come up with, hypothetical, realistic, and otherwise. But now we're actually going to do what we were supposed to do the whole time, which is make some predictions, right?
Exactly. The season is here, and we have some last-minute questions before things get rolling on Tuesday night. So we're recording this early on Sunday night because Ben has some scheduling conflicts with the beginning of the year here. But let's jump right into it. I grabbed these questions. These are from the NBA preview. And so both you and I have answered some of these over the last few weeks from online with Sports Illustrated. But to begin with, which team will surprise people this year?
Well, it's a team that you've tried to call boring. You've tried to write them off and say they're not very talented. It's a team that I really believe in. It's the Milwaukee Bucks, led by Giannis. You know, I think what I really see around this team is a phenomenon I'm going to call premature exhilaration. It's the sensation that occurs when the basketball intelligentsia hops on a team 2 years too early, right at the start of when they're fun, as opposed to when they're going to be good. And uh-huh. I'm sure you've started to see some of these Instagrams and, you know, looping vines or whatever else you call them these days of Giannis during the preseason. I mean, he's been an absolute monster. He added a whole nother layer of muscles on top of his already existing muscles.
He really does look, it looks like he's about 20 pounds heavier this year than the last 3 years, which can't be good for the rest of the league.
No, he finally went to my trainer, so that's good. It's good to see him.
He's ready. He's eating vegan. He's set.
The only question is, how big will his next leap be? I mean, when I look at Giannis, it's like, okay, does he really get all the way to that MVP conversation, or is he only like fifth or sixth in the voting? And I think he's got enough help around him, especially with the healthy Middleton, where they're a team that wasn't quite in that, you know, second tier of the East last year that's going to be cracking into it this year. I expect big things. I'm hoping for 50 wins. I'm hoping for a playoff series victory. I'm dreaming for a long shot Eastern Conference Finals run. Probably won't happen this year, but that's really my dream. I would love to see LeBron versus Giannis in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's my surprise team.
Okay, good. We're going to come back to the Bucks there because I have some thoughts, but as far as surprise teams, it's a really difficult question to answer at this point because I feel like the way basketball media works, it's almost impossible for teams to like legitimately surprise people anymore because people have been buzzing about what's possible for the Nuggets this year since like July. So the Nuggets would have been my pick if we weren't in the like basketball internet era where people have been talking about them forever. The Wolves are probably too good to qualify as a surprise team because I think everybody's expecting them to make the playoffs, but I do think that they can be a little bit better than people realize just because Kat and Jimmy are that good. But the two teams that I came back to are the Pistons and the Heat. And the Heat, I'm really excited to watch. The Pistons, we covered on the last episode. Reggie Jackson is the equivalent of a dentist drill, you said?
Yeah, and John Schumann tweeted out his preseason plus minus, which of course I would like pour over. Reggie Jackson has the worst preseason plus minus for the Pistons by a mile. So he's been worse than a drill. I mean, he's basically like you're trying to get your cavity filled and it just slips and now all of a sudden you only have gums left. I mean, that's pretty much what Reggie Jackson's been so far for Detroit. So bad sign.
So not encouraging. Not encouraging out of the gate. But let me make my case. I think the Heat are going to be a legitimately good team, like fourth or fifth in the East and capable of hanging with everyone in the East. So, and I guess I don't know whether that qualifies as a surprise or not after last season. I think a lot of people are expecting them to regress a little bit. So, yeah. So they're my surprise. The Pistons, I think, will be surprising only insofar as, like, nobody at the bottom of the East is good enough to really make the playoffs. And so I could see the Pistons slipping in as the eighth seed with, like, 38 wins.
Yeah, the NBA needs nothing more than Philly beating out Detroit for the eighth seed, means somehow like, Detroit will probably beat out Philly for the eighth seed in like the most depressing turn of events possible. The other thing I'd say about Miami is I came up with this line last week and I've just been repeating it in my head over and over, but they went from a big three to a medium 10, and now their medium 10 is actually pretty good. Like they're deep, and I'm not with you in terms of like their watchability. Like you were trying to sell me how exciting they're going to be. I don't really believe in that, but yeah. I do think they're going to be solid. And I think what you're saying in terms of, you know, potentially winning a first round playoff series, competing with anybody. I mean, if you get into that 4-5 matchup with them in the East, you know, or even a 3-6, that favorite team is going to be uncomfortable. So
that's exactly right. The Heat are going to be a pain in the ass to play against. They're not going to scare any real title contenders, but they are going to be tough all year long. So they're a factor, but we should move on to disappointments. Who's your flop of the year?
You already know who I'm going to say. It's Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm out. I got a phone call from Denmark today from a journalist, and he wanted to talk about like super teams and the overarching themes of like the last 15 years of the NBA. And all I wanted to do was like talk about how I don't believe in the Thunder. I realize I'm going way out on a limb here, and it could definitely backfire. But I think people still get too caught up in the name recognition of their stars, not quite thinking through the efficiency and collective fit of those players, and then also really overlooking their depth concerns. And to me, that's going to be their undoing. When I look at Houston, San Antonio, and Golden State, I see three teams that are very deep. All, you know, with Golden State aside, San Antonio and Houston both have concerns. But I think Oklahoma City's depth concerns are bigger than any of the other concerns from those A-list teams in the West. And so I think that makes reaching their ceiling much more difficult than people who are sort of on Team Thunder think it will be.
Okay, first of all, I think you owe Raymond Felton an apology regarding OKC depth. It's a big summer addition. Second of all...
Well, hold on. Because the highlight of his career was just you taking a road trip and getting in trouble with your mom, not getting to play Xbox for 2 months, okay? It's been all downhill since that fateful trip that you made to go watch UNC's title trip, okay? So yeah, I don't owe anyone an apology.
Deep cut for any September open floor listeners. Look, I'm with you to a point. I don't know. This is one of those things where, like, you're so down on OKC that you're going to force me to be an OKC believer. And I think that they're going to be the third or fourth best team in the West. And they're going to have issues when they get to the playoffs. If they're playing against the Warriors, they don't have enough pieces to hang with the Warriors. And some of their guys are going to get played off the floor, which is true for literally every team in the NBA. So I don't think you can grade them against that curve. And beyond that, like, I don't know, man. I'm higher than you are on the Russ and Paul George pairing, and I don't think Melo is gonna be enough to like screw it up. And they've got two great defensive players in Roberson and Steven Adams. And like Russ, we've been over this. I don't really love his game aesthetically, but like you're gonna win a lot of games with him and Paul George on the floor. So I guess they have a pretty high floor, and I'm not sure how they could flop, really. Like, what are you thinking? Like, six seed, maybe?
No, to be honest, there's two things happening. One, I'm still a little frustrated that Paul George made that comment to USA Today about how they're sort of like, you know, championship contenders that are going to win it.
Yeah, I thought that was obviously just
way too much.
Too far.
And second, I would love these guys to figure it out, because I've been waiting for Westbrook and Paul George to sort of like reach basketball nirvana for years, and it hasn't happened, right? So if they figure it out, it's one of those things where I'm sort of like betting against my desires, you know?
Okay.
So I'm kind of like hedging either way. For the record, I think they're going to be the fourth seed in the West. I just think the gap between those top three and Oklahoma City is wider than most people realize. And I do see some downside, you know, any injury at all. And Melo misses a lot of time. Westbrook, we know, plays this crazy bruising style. Any injury to one of those three, and they're going to look totally different and really, you know, incompetent pretty quickly.
I don't know. I like Patrick Patterson coming off the bench and potentially starting for Melo at various points. Although,
okay,
Melo,
but you're doing that thing where you named their only capable bench player and are pretending that that counts as depth. That does not count as depth.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Look, the thing with OKC, to go back to the beginning of the podcast, we haven't seen them play a game yet, so it's kind of difficult to gauge exactly what we're talking about with the Thunder. So let's just wait and see with them. And I'll give you the two teams that I'm worried about. I don't necessarily want to predict an all-out flameout from either one, but the first is the Blazers, because
uh-oh.
I just think that they have a lot of issues defensively, and that it like. That roster has some holes, and they just are kind of running it back with everybody this year. I mean, they got rid of Allen Crabbe, but they didn't really add anybody who addresses their issues. And they're like, Al-Farouq Aminu was not great in the games he played last year. Mo Harkless is one of those players where like the idea of Mo Harkless is really attractive, and he's always disappointing. And then CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard can't guard. I don't know how. I love Yusuf Nurkic and have for several years, but I don't know how real like that one like 3 week stretch was. So I don't know, man. Like I think that people should be a little cautious before they just write the Blazers into the playoffs.
Great news. I've got them as my five seed in the Western Conference. I'm all in on Portland. No, this is one of these situations where maybe I'm overreacting to how down I was on Nurkic before the trade, and then
yes.
Just sort of his big blow up after the trade. I thought that, you know, there was a lot to buy into after the trade with those guys. The offense looked better balanced. Nurkic clearly brought something different to their defense that they had been sorely missing.
Well,
I
yeah,
agree. Their rotation has a lot of question marks. I mean, you're highlighting guys who are very unreliable, and you're right to do that. Harkless, Aminu. But if those guys are just like slightly better versions of themselves than they were last year, and Lillard remains healthy, and I think him missing time last year was kind of a destabilizing event for them,
mm-hmm.
They can be better than they were last year. And I also kind of buy into this notion that our anonymous scout was pushing, which is, look, Portland's in position to get off to a really good start here, because unlike every other team in their division, whether it's Oklahoma City, Minnesota, Denver, Utah, they didn't have a crazy like upside down summer, right? And
yeah.
When I saw them during the preseason, like they were hitting the ground running. You know, I mean, Dame and CJ were playing effortlessly together. Nurkic is obviously highly motivated, trying to cash in for a max contract
That's
next
true.
Summer.
Contract year Nurkic is going to be big, and the screens that Nurkic sets are phenomenal for CJ and Dame. So like, there's value there too. So I understand the case for the Blazers makes sense, and you're yeah. right that continuity will be an advantage for the first month or two. I just think that like they weren't that good last year and they weren't that good 2 years ago, and not much has changed along the way here.
No, I hear you. Their margin of error is thin. I mean, yeah. No question. And I think when I'm picking them as a five seed, that's their best case scenario. I'll be the first one to say that. Like, that is sort of everything goes right for them to get there. But I also think when you look at that pack from 5 to 10 in the West, it's really tight. Someone's going to have to win it. And at least we know what Portland is, even though it's a flawed product, like you've mentioned. It's been inconsistent and kind of porous defensively. You know who these guys are. You know what they do well. And offensively, you know, Dame and CJ, you can just bank those guys, you know? I mean, that is kind of a proven formula on that end. And they've balanced very well with Nurkic, too.
Yeah. Well, the other team I had as a potential disappointment, and I'm reluctant to just write them off because I like the Bucks, I like the Blazers, but the Bucks are the other one, man, where I am completely on the other side of the spectrum from you, where, like, I look at their roster and they just didn't do anything to fix anything. And, like, I just think that's a red flag. The same way Portland was like coming into this offseason with a lot of different things that they could have done, and they just sort of stood pat. The Bucks, I don't know what they're counting on beyond Giannis.
I think some of it, just to defend their lack of movement, though, I think some of it is this notion that if you don't go anywhere and everybody else takes a half step back, like, you know, by attrition, you've almost won, right? And you look at some of these teams, whether, you know, I specifically Toronto, you could even potentially throw Boston into this mix just because of just the overhaul that they've had to have and the loss of heart and soul, as Isaiah Thomas would put it, for their summer. But this was kind of a year, if you were a solid team, a young team, a growing team, to just chill and let everybody else kind of fall back to the pack a little bit. And look at the rest of the playoff picture. No, but look, no, hold on, though. Because look at the rest of the playoff picture. Atlanta, Indiana, Chicago, they're all just torpedoed, you know? So I think Milwaukee's standing heading into this season is significantly on firmer ground than last year.
Okay, but last year the Bucks only won 42 games. It wasn't like a 47-win season where they were like solidly in the middle of the East.
I know,
like,
but that. you don't value Chris Middleton as a game-changing presence, and he is that. And he missed basically 2/3 of the season, right? So their record is not indicative of their talent. Chris Middleton is, when he's on the court with Giannis, they have a significantly higher ceiling than that. To me, that's like a 46-win team if he plays the whole season. And I think some of these guys grow into their roles, familiarity, comfort level, Giannis playing better. I don't think 50 wins is crazy for these guys. I really don't.
Okay. I guess I'm coming at it as a fan of the Eastern Conference who's seen a bunch of Eastern Conference teams mistake, like, modest playoff success for real progress that then tricks them into investing in a core that actually isn't very good. So basically, speaking as a Wizards fan who's watched the Wizards buy in on a bunch of crappy rosters over the last 20 years, it feels like I'm watching the same process happen with the Bucks, where they're like, hey, like, we made the playoffs last year. We made some noise against the Raptors. Ultimately lost that series, but whatever. Like, Chris Middleton's great, and then it's all going to turn around this year. Malcolm Brogdon, like, I don't have a problem with any of the players that they have. I just, if I were them, I would have tried to sell high on either Brogdon or Middleton to try to shake things up and really go for it with Giannis.
That's a very valuable perspective, long-term perspective that you provided there, because that happens all the time in the East. Mm-hmm. I guess my two counters would be the East is awful this year. Like, well, it's unusually bad this year, so I think the likelihood that they slide back to
middle of
the road is less likely. But also, the other thing I would say is there's a strong chance that Giannis this year is better than any player the Wizards have had over the last 25 years.
You're 100% right.
And I'm just all in on Giannis. And I don't know why you hate Giannis all of a sudden. It's really bothering me.
I don't hate Giannis. I don't hate Giannis. You're right that the case for the Bucks is the East is horrible and Giannis is amazing. And that might be enough to put them in the top half of the conference. But speaking of amazing players, let's do some award picks. So we had to do this for a roundtable that will run Monday. MVP, Rookie of the Year, Most Improved, Coach of the Year, Sixth Man, Defensive Player of the Year. Let's try to do it quick since this is all like rampant speculation. But who do you have as MVP?
Steph Curry, Golden State Warriors.
Me too. Me too. No. Make your case.
No,
Make your case.
Do you seriously took him?
I did. Yeah, absolutely.
You told me you were going to take Kawhi like 3 weeks ago. God, I never...
You know what, though? I'll be honest. I really love Kawhi, and I loved watching him in last year's playoffs, but I'm a little freaked out by two things. The first being the quad injury that is going to keep him out of game one, and like who knows what exactly is going on there. But the second thing is the Rockets, you're starting to sell me on the Rockets winning 60 games and being the two seed. And I think it's harder to win MVP if you're going to be like third or fourth in the West.
Yeah. I mean, you're an inside the park home run. You're so good at covering your bases. I got to say, my case for Curry is this. Golden State is not really a franchise where the torch gets passed from one superstar to another. It's sort of like they just keep moving the torch around the perimeter until someone has a wide open shot and then the defense gets, you know, immolated. And that, to me, reasserting Steph Curry this season is as easy as, you know, a snap of the fingers. I mean, we saw it when Durant was injured. Like, he's still that same guy. He didn't shoot the ball as well as he has in the past from three-point range last year. He made a concerted effort to bring Kevin Durant into the fold last year. He's gotten paid. He got his revenge against Cleveland. And he also listened to everybody talk about KD for 4 months. And surely in his, you know, deep heart of hearts, when he is massaging Aisha's feet late at night, he truly believes he's the best player in the world because all these super competitive guys do. I think that sets the table for a possible return to that, you know, maybe not 100% of where he was in terms of the, the unanimous MVP level season, but like 90, 95% of that. And if Golden State wins 70 games, if Curry is leading the league in plus minus, if he's averaging like 27, 28 a game and it's coming easily and he's putting on these nightly shooting performances, I think all this talk about splitting votes and the Golden State fatigue factor and all that will go out of the window, and one of those two Warriors guys will win it. And I just wouldn't be surprised at all if it was Steph, even though I still think KD's the better all-around player. And part of my logic here is sort of what Draymond was saying, where he's like laughing at the rest of the league. Part of the reason why Draymond can laugh at the rest of the league is because nobody solved the Curry problem yet, right? There's not a defense where you can take him away. And until that, emerges, he's still a guy who can get you 40 points in a preseason game, who can get you, you know, 35 points in 20 minutes, who can go off for these crazy scoring binges that have everybody tuning in and talking about, you know, watching that game and getting the buzz and the hype factor around him. And I'm not sure anybody else at this stage of their careers can do it. He's still in his prime. That's my case for Curry.
Good. I agree with everything you said. And we've been over this. We're a very pro-Steph podcast. We're split on the actual Warriors, but we've always been pretty pro-Steph. And, I think it's even simpler. Like, you could have answered it in 15 seconds. Like, is the most valuable player on the best team the NBA has ever seen. So this shit shouldn't be complicated. I do think, obviously, it's more political than that, and after the two MVPs, which like somehow became controversial across the league, it gets a little murky. But looking out at the league and listening to people talk about this season, I am sensing a rising tide of backlash to the Steph Curry backlash. Where nice. I think everybody is going to realize that he is clearly the most valuable player in basketball this year. And barring like an outrageous season from Kawhi or a couple other people, like Giannis, if Giannis went nuts and the Bucks were the 2 seed or the 3 seed, like he'd be in the mix. But like barring something crazy, I just think we're going to get to March and the Warriors are going to be on pace to win like 70 games. And if it's between Steph and Durant, like it should be Steph.
I'm not ready to say that until I see these guys play. But if it comes down to Steph and Durant, I think the basketball intelligentsia, I trust that they will be able to crown one of those two guys down the stretch. Like, let's say Golden State wins 70, nobody else wins 60, or everybody else is struggling to win 60. At that point, the gap is so wide, and we've already kind of punished the Warriors super team last year by not having one of their guys win MVP. It's sort of like when LeBron first went to Miami. He didn't win it the first year, but he did win it the next 2 years.
Yeah.
I can see everybody saying, like, come March, all the voters saying, and guys like you and me, you know, we do this and we track it very religiously. I could see in March everybody sitting around and saying, look, Golden State's so much better than everybody. We have to decide which one of their guys is going to get it. We have this month-long argument. One of the guys emerges, has a strong showing down the stretch in April, cinches the award, and everybody votes for that guy. You know what I mean? Like, I could see that happening. I don't know if it's going to be Durant. I don't know if it's going to be Steph, but my bet, my money will be on Steph.
Okay. Who do you have for Rookie of the Year?
Lonzo. I think it's Lonzo or Ben Simmons. I think it's going to come down to touches and role, you know, usage and hype. You know, and I think both those guys are positioned to have all of those things. I just like the stability of Lonzo's cast a little bit better than what the Sixers have working with them. I think style-wise, he's got a lot of young guys who can run with him, whether it's Nance, Randall, Kuzma, all those guys. And then he also has in the half court, you know, a guy like Brook Lopez, where he's going to just be able to like rack up a steady diet of assists playing two-man game with a guy like Brook Lopez.
Yeah.
It might not translate to a ton of wins, but I also think, I mean, he's going to be on TV so much. Everyone's always going to be talking about him. He is going to have fairly good volume stats, even if the efficiency isn't there, that I think that will be enough to get it done.
Can I tell you something? I was running yesterday and I figured out how I feel about Ben Simmons versus Markel Fultz. The way to explain their jumpers is, like, Markel Fultz right now is like a golfer with the shanks, whereas Ben Simmons is just a bad golfer and is never going to be able to shoot. And so I think that's a red flag with him. He's going to turn the ball over a million times this year. Lonzo, I like that pick. I wonder, like, I don't know if he's going to crack 10 points a game, though, for the Lakers. And he's probably going to play like 30, 35 minutes. And his jumper is quietly shakier than I think a lot of people realize. Like, he's still known as a shooter, but hasn't made shots in an NBA setting, whether it was Summer League or some of the preseason. Like, he just has not played very well as a scorer. And so I think that could set him back. Like,
Let me stop you right there. You're tearing apart young guys who are not complete players. Who are you picking?
No, I am picking Dennis Smith. I think Dennis Smith is the best positioned to come in and be awesome year one. I don't think that he's going to end up being the best player. I think Jonathan Isaac, what I've seen in limited highlights, looks pretty awesome. And he's a guy who I thought the Celtics should have taken at three. And I think Fox, if you give him a couple years to sort of like get his legs underneath him, is going to be awesome. And Lonzo could be great. But for year one, give me Dennis Smith, give me dunks, give me like 16, 17 points a game, six assists.
He's not going to do that. He's not doing that.
Who else is scoring for Dallas though? Like, there's
nobody.
I mean, there's,
they were the only team last year to average less than 100 points per game. And
I know.
They're rough. So I don't see him doing that, but I think he's third on my ballot right now, my preseason ballot. I think he's a solid pick for the reasons that you mentioned. I think you're expecting a little bit much from him there. We had a question in the open floor mailbag, and apologies to the guy who sent it in. I'm sure he'll realize who I'm talking about once I ask this, but do you think any of these long shot vets have a chance, you know, to kind of pull a Brogdon from last year, come out of nowhere and be like, okay, you win it, but you don't really win it? You say if it's Teodosic or Bogdanovic or one of those guys, I mean, do you see any dark horses here?
I think Bogdanovic and John Collins with the Hawks are dark horses, but I don't see them actually winning it. In part because, like, it's a really loaded rookie class and we should vote for a real rookie. John Collins is a real rookie, but he's on the Hawks and nobody's going to watch the Hawks for the next 6 months. But like, Bogdanovic is 25 years old and has been playing pro basketball since he was like 17. So I'm good on him not getting a vote, but we got a specific Bogdanovic question about his season with the Kings. And all I have no takes except that I'm really excited to watch him this year. I've heard a lot of buzz. I watched him at the Olympics, and he was awesome. And he's definitely going to be a bright spot for them.
Yeah, I am a little nervous about how they're going to use him because he hasn't played a ton in the preseason, hasn't taken a ton of shots. Like, that's his role, right? And it seems like on paper, he's exactly what they need, like that floor spacing kind of like offensive weapon, kind of balance to whether it's Buddy or whoever else you want to say. Like, it seems like on paper, he would play a lot of minutes for them, but that hasn't been his position on the depth chart yet during preseason. So, you know, maybe the Kings are like trying to keep him under wraps. More likely, they're just going to play all their vets and pray, and that could come at his expense. I'm not sure we should be dismissing Teodosic, though. I mean, I'm not I'd have to talk myself into voting for him as
Teodosic
a voter, given
like
how old he is.
35 years old, man. Come on.
I know, but he's technically a rookie. But, but don't you think people could vote for him? I mean, like, can't you imagine an argument where you have the two LA point guards, Lonzo versus Teodosic, and Teodosic plays on a better team. He has similar assist numbers. He's scoring slightly more. He's more efficient. Maybe the team's plus minus is better with him on the court than Lonzo's in LA.
No,
and people saying like Teodosic should be rookie of the year. Can't you hear this argument happening in March?
I will fucking protest in the streets. We follow up giving Malcolm Brogdon, who's like 26 years old, we follow that up with 35-year-old Teodosic on the podium. No, that's not allowed to happen. I love Teodosic.
That's where you draw the line.
It's too far, and we should retroactively give it to Embiid last year. All right, Coach of the Year, who you got?
Pretty boring pick. I'm going to take Brad. I'm pretty sure I've taken Brad the last 4 years.
I don't really care about this. We should just move on. I've got Eric Spoelstra. Who knows?
Yeah, very quickly. I just think he's set up pretty well for this. Even though it usually goes to overachievers, you can just hear the Boston hype machine saying, Danny turned over his entire roster, and Brad turned it into a contender yet again. And, you know, guys like Kyrie and Gordon Hayward could easily have career years. We know who's going to get the credit for that. It will be Brad. And there's a bunch of, you know, potential no-name rotation guys who could emerge as contributors for them. Again, the credit will go to Stevens' system. I also think him and Spoelstra are the best coaches who have never won it. You know, I think there's a decent chance one of those guys wins it, right?
That's why I picked Spoelstra, just because I think, like, there are a lot of people who wanted to vote for him last year, and if the Heat can surprise people this year, he'll get a lot of love. But in general, I just don't put very much stock in Coach of the Year, because if you look over the years, like, the best coach almost never wins this. And, you know, like Greg Popovich, I don't know how many he's won, but I don't think he's won in the last like 5 years or so. Rick Carlisle never wins. Brad Stevens has never won. So I don't know. A lot of times people end up giving it to like a feel good story, like Mike D'Antoni and Dwayne Casey. And then like a month later, it just looks horrific. So I try not to care too much about Coach of the Year. Particularly 8 months before they give the award.
I would love to have a tape of what you just said and hand that tape to you from 2 years ago to show your maturity. I mean, lecturing us about how Greg Popovich doesn't get enough respect as the best coach.
And he doesn't.
That was beautiful. I mean, this is a 30-plus sharp take if I've ever heard one.
Who cares? Most improved player.
I'm going to take Nurkic. I mean, I'm buying all into what the Blazers are trying to do with him. I just think this award is often screwy. You know, there's like a delay factor. You look at Giannis winning. I mean, he won it. He kind of got a little momentum from the previous year. People are talking about him, and he kind of carried that over. I think that's sort of where Nurkic is at. Like, he has enough buzz that everybody realizes that he's a different player than he was when he started last season, and his just entire framework is so much better. He's not fighting for minutes with Jokic. He's not trying to figure out what his role is. He's not playing on a team that doesn't have a point guard. He's not upset. He's not overweight. He's not battling health injuries, you know, at least injuries of consequence. He was wearing a face mask and, you know, getting himself concussed the other day.
Perfect.
But I just think all of those factors are lined up really well for him in Portland. He's got the point guards to set him up. He has a clear, demonstrable impact. He's going to put up monster raw numbers because so many teams are going small, and there's just going to be a lot of 2015 nights for a guy with his size. even if some of those numbers I think are occasionally empty. And I just think, you know, that's a really compelling story for voters who are looking for that clean turnaround. I think he's going to take it.
Okay. As you said, the criteria here is fairly nebulous, and so it's tough to kind of figure out what we're really even talking about. But I did look at the last three winners, and that is Giannis, CJ McCollum, and Jimmy Butler. So it sort of looks like everybody can agree that the most improved player is someone who's actually good. So Nurkic qualifies in that category. But I was also thinking long and hard about two Lakers picks, Brandon Ingram and D'Angelo Russell. I think Ingram, it still kind of feels like he's a year away from doing anything that matters.
Which self-identified premature exhilaration. I'm so proud. This is great.
Yeah, it is. Well, I've also just seen, I haven't watched any Lakers preseason games, but during those games, Lakers fans are just like venting about Brandon Ingram nonstop. Somebody says they wish they had traded Ingram and not D'Angelo. And like, it's just, it's a tense time right now in Lakers Nation. And because they need him to be good, because like, if he at least looks like he's a legitimate piece of a contender, then that helps them attract guys next summer. But I don't know if he's going to get there this year. D'Angelo, I think, has a lot of room to make some noise in the East. I understand that you're not a fan, but he's going to have more stability over the next 6 months than he has had over the first, like, 3 years of his career. And I don't know. I think he can go off, and I think he'll win it.
Okay.
Cool.
I mean, it's a classic most improved player type of situation where, you know, bigger role, more trust.
I also just think there's a lot of
unlimited
sympathy.
Green light, you know?
There's some sympathy after Magic Johnson, like, walked him down a dark alley and just ended it right there for his Lakers dreams.
You mean when an NBA legend said what needed to be said? Is that what you're...
Look, Magic wasn't wrong about anything. I'm not here to argue with Magic. What about Sixth Man?
I mean, this is another award where really who cares? I pick Lou Williams mostly just because, you know, we always talk about Clippers, injury issues, inconsistency. Like, one guy who you can turn to for scoring if Blake Griffin or Gallinari or Austin Rivers or Patrick Beverley misses time is Lou Williams. And I think that just should lead to a monster usage rate. I think he's a real... His type is a real benefit of the new pace and space, because if you're good one-on-one in isolation, if you get to the free throw line, if you can break guys down off the dribble, you have more room to work with than ever. And you know, you're not necessarily taking as much contact going to the basket. So I think it's not really a surprise that he's having this real like late career flourish. You know, he had a career year last year kind of splitting time between the Lakers and Rockets. And I think he's set up really nicely role-wise. And kind of depth chart wise for the Clippers. That's why I picked him. But
you're preaching the choir, man. I can give you my rant. Lou Williams fan. So you don't have to explain yourself to me.
But I also think I should. Well, hold on, though. I should explain myself to the hardcore advanced stat guys who are going to be like rolling their eyes and saying, like,
fanboys out there.
What about Iguodala? Look, guys, I've tried to vote for these players over and over and over. Like, we can never muster enough support. So with these picks, I'm sometimes doing them with an eye towards who I think is going to win rather than who I think I'm going to vote for.
Okay, nice. The sixth man really like hits the bucket getters from coast to coast. I mean, it's Jamal Crawford is like sixth man emeritus. And then my pick is...
That word is definitely emeritus, but that's okay.
Okay, well, I don't know. Sixth man... My choice is Will Barton, who is basically Lou Williams, but he's from Baltimore, so I am irrationally loyal to him. And the Nuggets are going to need him to help in the backcourt. I think he's going to get like 30 minutes a game for them, so he'll have plenty of opportunities. And it would be too boring to pick Eric Gordon in Houston, but like Eric Gordon's going to be awesome too. Greg Monroe is another one who's going to be on the radar, but. Defensive player.
I could tell you who I picked last year, who I would love to pick again this year.
Who?
one of your favorite players, Patty Mills. I think he gets overlooked in this conversation. There's no question.
Patty Mills is going to basically be a starter for the Spurs for a lot of this season, right?
That's a great way to win this award, right? Play starters that's minutes true. And come off the bench, but we'll see.
All right. Last one. You, at the beginning of this podcast, you said, I think this is going to take longer than you expected, and you were correct on that. Defensive player of the year.
Rudy Gobert. I just think, you know, if the baton keeps getting passed to guys who were close but haven't won it and voters try to spread the love around, he's a pretty obvious pick. I think the one real benefit for Utah of losing Gordon Hayward is that it's going to shine a huge light on Gobert's value. I still think he's one of the most underrated players in the league. I'm sure you're going to want to argue about that because he's not a bucket getter and he can't shoot three-pointers or whatever else you value, but he really is. And I think if they're still like a top five defense and they're just grinding out all these wins, they're still in the playoff picture, it's going to be a very compelling, like, one-man army type of argument. Like, sure, you know, Draymond and Kawhi are, like, really good, but they have all this help. You know, Gobert is out there all by himself.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of where I see it. Plus, he always just dominates the defensive advanced stats. I mean, he's so good on the advanced stats, whether, you know, and, of course, that's influenced by huge block numbers, great defensive rebounding numbers. But whether it's impact with the defensive real plus minus, whether it's win shares,
dude,
whatever,
he's
always right there.
Yeah. Like a few weeks ago, we got a question about who to watch if you want to appreciate elite defenses. And we answered it in the team context. And I think you said the Spurs, and I said, watch teams that don't play defense. But the just to appreciate how important it is. But as far as like, if you're really just looking for a spectacle, watching Draymond Green or watching Gobert is fucking incredible. Just the amount of ground that those guys cover and how Draymond, his ability to sort of rotate onto whoever and shut them down is pretty amazing. And Gobert, like, really does shut down like 10 or 15 feet of the paint. And he's going from like the 3-point line to the rim, like, that dude is a monster, so I do appreciate him. Thank you very much. I do, and I picked him to win Defensive Player of the Year. And when this when our SI awards post comes out tomorrow, I bet you like all of our writers pick Gobert. But just for the record, there's no way he wins this award if Utah misses the playoffs, right?
Yeah, and I think they'd have to be even better than that. Like, if they're sneaking in as an eighth seed, you know, I'm not sure that's going to be enough either. Like, I think they have to be in that 5-6 range for him to be considered. And, you know, it's tough because if I'm, like, a member of the local media there or a team or one of his teammates or him, I'm like, how do I even have a chance against this Golden State, like, media monolith? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And with Draymond. And I thought it was a really close race last year. I'm pretty sure I picked Gobert over Draymond, but Draymond won surprisingly by a bigger landslide than I expected, and that's hard to overcome. You know, the smart money might still be on Draymond.
Okay. Well, segue into the playoffs here. Do you have the Jazz in the playoffs, and give me your playoff seeds for the West and the East?
I do have the Jazz in the playoffs. I think for the most part, we've discussed a lot of this in the past, so I'm just going to run through it very quickly.
Yeah, so just run through it.
Yeah, in the West, I got 1, Golden State, 2, Houston, 3, San Antonio, 4, Oklahoma City, 5, Portland, 6, Utah, 7, Minnesota, 8, LA Clippers. The Nuggets are sort of the odd team out. I got Memphis at 10, Pelicans at 11, Dallas at 12, Lakers at 13, Phoenix at 14,
I stopped at 8.
Sacramento Kings are 15th.
Okay. Well, you know what? Thank you for making me feel better about potentially listing the Wolves as a surprise team. I feel like all the smart basketball reporters are like sneak dissing the Wolves and picking them to finish 6th and 7th, and it's going to be complicated. There's no shooting. The Wolves are going to finish in the top 5 in the West, so just accept that now. My Western playoff bracket is Warriors 1, Rockets 2, Spurs 3, Thunder 4, Wolves 5, and Wolves Thunder in the first round is going to be fantastic. Nuggets 6, Blazers 7, 8, Jazz.
And so the Clippers, how far do you have them down?
I really do. I came out and said that the Clippers were going to finish 11th, and then somebody transcribed it. I do have them finishing 11th. I just think it's going to get dark halfway through the year. But what about the East?
In the Eastern Conference, well, so I need to have about five things set up front. First of all, I realize Cleveland probably won't win the most games, but I am going to call them the one seed because they're really the only team that matters in the East right now.
Okay.
Apologies to all their teams. I'm calling Cleveland the one seed, even if LeBron jogs through the first 65 games. Okay. Cleveland's sure. The one seed. Washington's the two seed. Boston's the three seed. Milwaukee's the four seed. Toronto's the five seed. Miami's the six seed. Charlotte's the seven. Detroit is just barely the eighth, but only because I don't want to like jinx Philadelphia and I want to be pleasantly surprised if they beat out Detroit.
Okay, good. Yeah, I think everyone in America is rooting for the Sixers to beat out Detroit. So, but mine is remarkably similar. And the only thing I really struggle with is whether to, I don't know. I don't want to put too many expectations on the Wizards this year. I'm really feeling good. It's been a Wizards-free month on the podcast, but I just a lot of optimism coming into this year, and I could absolutely see them stealing the one seed. But beyond that, yeah, I'm for the record, I didn't do that. Cavs won, Wizards 2, Celtics 3, Heat 4, Raptors 5, Bucks 6, Hornets 7, and Pistons 8. And there are like five or six awful teams that are going to be fighting for that 7 and 8 spot. But we don't really need to talk more about the East. We should just dive into some mailbag questions here.
Yeah, I've got 10 Orlando, 11 Indiana, 12 Atlanta, 13 New York, 14 Brooklyn, 15 Chicago. I'm already regretting having the Nets below the Knicks. I think the Knicks could be much worse than we are all
they are, thinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
We should.
But, you know, past that, I think the real takeaway here is like we only need about three or four more like hardcore rebuilds before somehow Orlando's in the playoffs. And that is the best reason we need to go to a 1-16 playoff format. It's like if Orlando can somehow back its way into the playoffs just because everybody else has pulled the dynamite out of their pockets, that's a real red flag.
Okay. Couple mailbag questions, and then we got some podium questions at the end. Muse says, if you take LeBron James off the current Cavs roster, how are they any different from most Knicks teams from the past 20 years?
Well, how would you describe most Knicks teams from the past 20 years? Hopeless, directionless, well, no chance. What are the key descriptors here?
I think it's a really good question. I think what he's alluding to are just the like broken down veterans who look good on paper and will ultimately be really depressing. And even Kevin Love, like I understand every year, everyone's really excited about how great Kevin Love looks. But like if he were a Knick, he would be like the prototypical Knick with like some nagging injuries, just not quite as good as he was 5 years ago.
Like punching and a fire extinguisher. Like
doesn't
that.
Play defense. No, I don't know if there would be a fire extinguisher punch, but he does fit the mold. So I just thought it was a really good point. Obviously, LeBron lifts everyone on that roster.
Actually, clear out for 1 second, because I think I'm with the spirit of this question if we are not sure what Isaiah Thomas is. Mm-hmm. But I think if you've got LeBron and Isaiah Thomas, this is a legit, very good team. And this brings me to my point. I think Isaiah Thomas is easily the biggest X factor of this entire NBA season. The reason why I say that is like the stakes are so much higher for him this year, even than they were last year. Like you go back to last year, we all know the crazy plot twist, personal tragedy, amazing clutch performances, postseason, all of that. But this year he's playing on a team that matters. He's not playing on a cute story Boston Celtics team, right? If mm-hmm. Isaiah is incredible, Cleveland might cash in its, you know, Nets pick and go get a fourth superstar if he comes back healthy and he's balling out. If he's healthy, looks good, they have a chance to push Golden State in the finals. They might not win it, but it's going to not be a sweep if he's not healthy. I mean, that's really what you're looking at. If you don't have Isaiah Thomas, Golden State's road to 16-0 through the playoffs is starting to look pretty good.
Wait a second. Like, let's slow down here. You've made a couple claims that I am struggling with. Number one, the idea of having Isaiah Thomas in the finals, somehow swinging the finals to make it more competitive.
No, I'm just saying it makes it much more competitive. You have to have a second playmaker for LeBron. He can't do it all because the defense keys on him so much. I mean, they throw all these perimeter defenders at him to exhaust him. They have Draymond in the back to protect the rim. You have to have another legit playmaker to balance things.
They don't have that
right now. That's not Derrick Rose. That's not Dwayne Wade. That's not any of their perimeter guys. They have to have somebody in that role. If Isaiah is healthy, he can do a pretty good Kyrie facsimile.
Okay. I also think that the Warriors are amazing at targeting weak links, and they will make Isaiah borderline unplayable in that series. And it's gonna make
too
me
far.
Really sad.
Too far.
It's not gonna be fun.
I'm with you that the Warriors defense can do that, but that's going too far. Isaiah is still an excellent offensive weapon. Like Kyrie, his impact is gonna be felt far more offensively than defensively. But I'm saying if you take Isaiah off that offense, they're not going to be able to come close to scoring with Golden State in the finals. That's my point.
Well, the other point, and the reason it was a good question is because if there's any team in the NBA that would have sold themselves on Isaiah coming off like a vague hip injury with no clear timetable to return and no guarantee that he'll ever be the same player, it's the New York Knicks. So he's a Knicks player in spirit, and I do hope that he comes back and is close to 100% and is awesome for the Cavs. But
well,
that doesn't
that also,
change.
No, that also goes to my X factor thing too, because let's say he comes back and is awesome. Okay, now Cleveland might be able to convince LeBron to come back, might be convinced to go in all in on this big three with him and Love and LeBron. If he's not healthy, if he's not good, all of a sudden all those guys become available. The Knicks might be able to throw a max at Isaiah next summer and actually get him. Kevin Love might be become trade bait because LeBron leaves to go somewhere else, and now you're Cleveland and you have to do a rebuilding effort. All of these things to me, in terms of Cleveland's future and also their present, all get traced back to this Isaiah Thomas question. That's why I think he's the biggest X factor. And I think that's why the Knicks comparison right now, it's not fair. Because with Isaiah healthy, they're more than just LeBron and a bunch of old scrubs.
Okay. Two more X factor questions. The first is from Malcolm, who wanted us to talk about the Grizzlies. He says their over-under this year is 37.5, which I think is straight-up disrespectful. And we talked about them last podcast, and so I felt bad reading this question now because we were both pretty down on the Grizzlies. But I do – and Malcolm asks, where do you guys think the Grizz end up? I think we both have them in, like, the 10th seed range. But I wonder, is there any chance that they really blow things up this year?
Well, first of all, after I said they were one of my least favorite teams to watch, their official Twitter account just conveniently happened to follow me the very next day. So I'm expecting to get
you're on the
messages.
Grind radar.
Yeah, no, I'm expecting to get messages every night they put up like 110 or 120 when they're really clicking, where it's just like, hey, did you see that? Did you see what we did? That was pretty fun to watch, wasn't it? I'm kind of expecting that. And pretty soon after we had that conversation, they also put up 140 on the Pelicans, which, okay, that's not like the most impressive thing in the world. But still, I thought that was just kind of funny timing. In terms of, you know, their over-under line in Malcolm's question, to me, it's just a thin margin for error, right? Like Conley goes down or Gasol goes down, and both those guys have had issues in the past. It doesn't have to be for a long stretch. They're in big time trouble. And I just think that a lot of teams around them got better. And they're a team kind of like you're saying with Portland and Milwaukee, where they just kind of sat on their hands this summer.
Yeah.
Just made sideways moves. And they were already backsliding from their peak a few years ago. Now you're making sideways moves, trying to keep things together around, you know, two guys who are, you know, Conley just turned 30, Gasol's, you know, past 30. That just gets tricky. I don't see a big blow up. You know, to be honest, I think that they appreciate the steady, you know, kind of year in, year out type vibe. And I think they're going to stick with Mark and Mike as long as they possibly can in sort of a Spurs-like way.
So you're not wary of the ownership situation at all?
No, I am. But I don't think that that's going to determine whether they trade Mike or Mark. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I just don't know what to think in terms of like what the priorities are in Memphis right now. Like maybe they're just trying to make money because Robert Parra needs money. I just don't know. But that's like, if they could somehow trade Mike Conley and get him to like the Clippers or the Nuggets, that would be phenomenal. Like Gasol would look good on like 10 or 15 different teams. But I don't know if
If you're going to do that, what are you trying to get back? Because I'm hearing Memphis fans listening. I'm like, Malcolm, he's hearing you say trade Mike Conley, and he's throwing his iPod off of his balcony. And he's like, what is this national moron even talking about? And I don't think what you're suggesting is necessarily crazy. Like, if they backslide, that's an awful lot of money you're paying two guys who are over 30. And if you're not going anywhere, what's your backup plan? But I guess, are you saying just trade them for prospects? Or are you trying to stay relevant? Or what's your goal if you trade those guys?
No, but this is the problem that the Grizzlies have had for the last 5 years, is that it's never made sense to flip those guys because you're not going to get enough value in return to justify the real sacrifices that you're making. Like they were making the playoffs every single year, and they didn't want to give that away if they weren't going to get a ton back. And I don't think there would be that much of a market this year if you were trying to trade like Conley or Gasol. Not that they're not great, but they're both making a ton of money, and it's just they're just kind of in no man's land, and they've been there for like four or five years.
Yeah, and I think just with those guys' age, it's meaningfully bleaker than it's been in the past. I wouldn't say they've been necessarily in no man's land because they are making the playoffs. They are competitive to a certain degree in the past. I just don't know if they're quite on that same level this year.
Yeah. Okay. Last question from Ned. He says, on the last pod, Ben spoke about the Clippers possibly trading DeAndre Jordan if shit hits the fan in LA. If the Clippers go tits up and the Nuggets are on the bubble, would you see them making a play for DeAndre Jordan? So I don't see
them. Did you just read this question so you could say tits up? Was that was that the only reason why you included this?
I didn't. I think Ned might be from England, where that's more common. But no, look, I don't think the Nuggets can play another center. Which is one of the things that's going to be challenging with Jokic every year, is that like, I don't think you can just slide him to power forward and expect it to work the same way. DeAndre isn't attractive for them, but I do think like the Clippers should start to think about trading him. And I'm curious what you think of the potential market. Like Zach Lowe wrote on Friday that the Wizards should consider going after him. The Pelicans are another team where I could see it fitting in theory. But with DeAndre due to make like a massive amount of money this summer, it's just hard to find many situations where it makes sense long term.
I mean, the Wizards is a dream fit. I mean, just going back to tits up real quick. I mean, I had a flashback to like learning how to do the elementary backstroke when I was like 7 years old. Like that's what came into my mind when I thought about that phrase. But I think that Washington's, in terms of pure fit, like need, like that is a huge upgrade, you know, over their center personnel. I think we have to kind of wait on this just to see what happens with this extension talks, because that's sort of been floating a little bit. I'm not sure, you know, if that doesn't happen. Maybe we should dive into this. If you're the Clippers, there's a strong argument to keep him. You know, I mean, he's been very loyal. He's been very durable. Yes, the fit with Blake isn't perfect, but imagining a roster without DeAndre and only Blake and getting nothing back for DeAndre if he leaves next summer starts to get really dicey. I mean, remember why they were panicking with those emojis a few summers ago and chasing DeAndre into a house in Texas and locking him in there and like forcing him to sign that contract, was because of how bleak it was going to be if they didn't have him. It was going to be really, really bad. And that was back when they had Chris. You take DeAndre off this team now, how do they stop anybody defensively? I mean, it gets real ugly real quickly. And so I can see why there'd be, you know, a lot of aspiring contenders in that Washington mold who would want him.
The Clippers are in the same situation that the Grizzlies have been in, where the idea of losing him for nothing is crazy, and they didn't want to do that. And then the idea of trading him for like 30 cents on the dollar doesn't really get them anywhere. So it may make sense for them to just extend him. And I think DeAndre Jordan is almost underrated. Like I defensively, he's really valuable. He's a great athlete. He's one of the three or four guys who, like, if you watch him in person, he's like much bigger than you even realized watching on TV. And like, he's just a freak. And I think he could also have like sort of a Tyson Chandler aging process where like he's strangely effective well into his 30s. But I don't know, man. As a Wizards fan, like you said, he'd be a dream fit. Like, if that's the guy that they trade for, first of all, it would be really complicated because of how expensive he would make the roster. But he also, like, you can't play him at the end of playoff games, and so it's hard to find a team.
You could in the East. I mean, who's going to exploit him in the Eastern Conference?
But it's the free throw shooting is like a real issue in terms the final 6 minutes of a close game. Like, you can't have him on the floor.
I just think he would benefit from that West to East bump. You know, the old Paul Millsap route where you go from being all-star fringe guy to like amazing, unstoppable inside presence. And yeah, I mean, you might have to go small late in playoff games every once in a while, but you know, we're not that far away from a world where Markieff Morris is a playoff center, you know, down the stretch of games. Like, that's sort of where this all is going. And you know, the Clippers kept him on the court pretty well last year during the playoffs in a real conference against real competition. So if I'm Washington, I wouldn't necessarily let that cloud my interest. I would be a little bit worried about the money, because when you've got basically three max guys and you're trying to bring on a fourth, like, you have to have a really committed ownership group. I'm not sure they have that in Washington.
Well, that, and I think there's an opportunity cost. If you trade for DeAndre Jordan, you're not trading for a superstar who might raise your ceiling even higher. So that's why I wouldn't do it.
Who are you talking about? Boogie? Because I'd rather have DeAndre there than Boogie.
Listen, Ben, we're always talking about Boogie as far as Wizards trades are concerned. But
In terms of the Denver side of it, you hit it real quick. I mean, you have to build around Jokic. That involves getting the best possible defensive four you can. That's Paul Millsap at this point. It's going to probably have to be somebody else in a couple years. Your whole style is going to be offense only. You know, as long as he's in his prime, Jokic, and there's no way you can play 2 7-footers together. They tried it with Plumlee. Obviously, Plumlee is not DeAndre Jordan, but it wouldn't work. I mean, it's too far against the grain.
Yeah. One other thing, Daniel mentioned Jordan Bell in the preseason. Have you been watching him?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
This is really frustrating, man.
I was listening to this podcast. I forget which podcast it was, honestly, last week. I was listening to some analyst, and he was trying to tell, I think his argument was something along the lines of that the Golden State Warriors were not an entertaining team to watch. And I'm sitting here pulling my hair out saying, what does this moron know about the sport? Isn't he capable of seeing the brilliance that this team has from 1 through 13 or 14, including a nice rookie like Jordan Bell coming in, instant impact? And life's so good for these guys. You can go back to Festus Ezeli, JaVale McGee. When you're playing around that much talent and you've got specific things that you're good at, you just pop off the screen. And I think that's part of what is happening with Golden State. Is Jordan Bell is in a great situation. He's allowed to just thrive, and he's got all sorts of cover. And he is going to be their starting center in the not too distant future. I don't know if it'll be this year, but pretty soon.
He's going to be a real factor for them. And as far as the Warriors thing, I'm speaking among friends when I say that. I'm speaking among fellow people who watch basketball every night. Relative to other teams in the league, they are not as fun for me to watch. But I would prefer to watch a Warriors game to like an NFL game. But the Jordan Bell shit, man, that's going to get progressively more incredible because, did you ever hear the story of how that happened?
Refresh our memory.
Basically, the Warriors were calling, like, every single team in the first 10 picks of the second round, just, like, trying to get in there to get Jordan Bell. And every team was like, get out of here. We don't even want to talk to you guys. Lose our number. And then they called the Bulls, and of course, like the Bulls, and I think like a day or two before, and I think at the time an emailer pointed this out, that a day or two before the White Sox had made like a $2.5 million move And Jerry Reinsdorf, of course, owns the White Sox also. And lo and behold, the Bulls just sell their pick. And like, I think there might have been some other picks offered, and then the like future second round picks were offered, and then eventually it just turned into a straight up cash play, which is does not speak well to how the Bulls have been run for the last like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, it was also right around the same time they had to pay Rajon Rondo to go away. So you could also make the argument, okay, the money they got for selling Jordan Bell
exactly
went to cover the Rondo mistake. But I want to
it's just like if somebody did that, if somebody did that in a fantasy league, I understand you don't play fantasy sports, but that person would be not asked back the following year. They'd just be like, we're sick of your shit. Like, this is not acceptable. And
is it possible that Gar Forman is like Big Head from Silicon Valley, where he just continues to screw up and screw up, and yet because of some mysterious relationship he has with the ownership group and his bosses, he just continues to get more and more consolidated power? And this actually leads to my next amazing prediction, which I'm going to put on record here in mid-October. Because Gar Forman is Big Head and like just magically good things always happen to him, even though he screws everything up, the Bulls will have the number one pick in next year's draft. He will back his way into it somehow because he is the NBA's Big Head.
You know what? I hope that happens. I do, because I like it when the Bulls are good. So I would enjoy them getting some hope in there. And then they're going to have a lot of money to spend next summer. So I'm sure he'll max out Isaiah Thomas or something. But I love that theory, because you have described to a T exactly what Gar Forman has been to the Bulls the last few years.
Can't you just see him in the war room sipping on a Slurpee saying, we're going to sell a multi-talented defensive anchor to the best team in the world that doesn't need it. No problem. No, we don't need a future pick. No, we're good.
Gar Forman taking calls on the roof of the United Center. Yeah, that's perfect. All right. Couple podium questions here, and then basketball season can begin. Our first one is a little bit more serious. This is from Marcos, who says, "Hey guys, I'm a fellow NBA analyst for a few Spanish-speaking outlets in Puerto Rico, and I'm listening to the podcast through the Puerto Rican hurricane crisis. Right now, there's very little internet access, so every few days I go to the coast to download a few podcasts to listen to at night. Yours is always a great way to decompress. The situation here is pretty bad, and our complex political relationship with the United States makes it even more complicated. We still need help. At this point, I trust the Ricky Martin Foundation over all the others. He's here doing real work and taking the provisions to the places that really need him. Thank you guys so much, and please help spread the word if you can. Big hugs from Puerto Rico." And there's also a website called youcaring.com/people of Puerto Rico, where you can go to help. So yeah, thank you for listening, Marcos. That's incredible. And I've been thinking of the people in Puerto Rico for the last 2 weeks or so. But if anyone wants to help out, youcaring.com/people of Puerto Rico. Did you have any thoughts, Ben?
Yeah, no, Marcos has been a regular emailer and DMer, sends in great questions, and it's not like we get people asking for a lot. It's not like we ask you guys a lot for anything. We mentioned a week or two ago the work that Carmelo Anthony has done in terms of fundraising, you know, by staying mellow with his Twitter account and kind of raising money for Puerto Rico. I think we should heed Marcos's advice. You know, look up that Ricky Martin Foundation that he mentioned. I'm sure there's plenty of other ways you can donate money. It sounds like they really need it. And I don't know. I was humbled that Marcos took the time to send this in through what they're going through in Puerto Rico. Just wanted to thank him for doing that.
Yeah. Shout out to Marcos, and help out if you can. And one other thing to add is he started talking NBA towards the end of the email and said that Rodney Hood is better than Devin Booker. So, Golliver, I hope that you are proud of how misguided you've made various listeners over the last few weeks. That's just a horrendous take, and it's all your fault.
It's amazing that he keeps emailing us, because the first time he emailed, he said that we're one of his favorite NBA podcasts, and I emailed back to say, look, if we're not your favorite, I don't want to hear from you, and I was kind of joking, but he took it and ran with it, and he did drop like 750 words of very hardcore basketball analysis in our inbox. And, you know, it's one of these things where, like, look, we're all looking for stuff to kind of get through on a day-to-day basis, whether tough times, you know, good times, whatever it might be. I just love that this image of him, like, going out to catch a signal on his phone so he can download a podcast and then, you know, send in his scorching anti-Booker takes to you through, I'm sure, what is, you know, an absolute nightmare on the island. So good luck, Marcos, and thanks again.
For real. All right. Next question, follow up on last week. I think you mentioned your diet. Matt asks, is Ben Golliver a vegan? What's his favorite dish to make? Mine are split red lentil soup or doenjang with tofu and seaweed. I definitely pronounced that wrong.
You nailed it. Nailed it. You had it.
For vegetarian, I make pasta with fresh goat cheese quite often. Andrew, what kind of crap do you put into your body? Ben, tell us about your vegan diet.
So look, I have never felt more like a poser than this past couple of days, because if you mention the word vegan on a podcast, every vegan who listens to your podcast will contact you. I received probably 15 requests about what I'm eating, how I eat it, and so forth. And guys, just to clarify, I've said this before, I have been a vegetarian for going on like more than three years now, but I don't have the willpower to go full vegan. But I love that this anti-animal diet craze is just sweeping the NBA. Everybody went vegan this summer. It was definitely the cool thing to do. Kyrie, Dame Lillard, Jahlil Okafor, you know, quasi-NBA player on that last one. But just to set the record straight, not a full vegan, but I'm certainly eating a lot healthier and I'm treating myself a lot better than Andrew is over here. And I'm not slaughtering any animals like you are.
I thought you were a full vegan. So I think that might be my fault that everyone thinks you're a vegan. But as far as the crap that I put into my body, I will just say one thing. Ben was talking about the national anthem recently and like asking what people were going to do during the national anthem. And we had a long talk via text message. And then at the end, I said, by the way, I feel like I should be honest here. During almost every national anthem at Wizards games, I go up to the concourse and eat a Papa John's pizza as like a pregame tradition. And so I'll just be standing on the concourse eating a pizza. It's really embarrassing, but it's something I've done since I was a kid at Wizards games. And yes, so that's the crap that I put into my body. And again, this is a self-improvement podcast. We're all just trying to get on Ben's level, and we'll all get there eventually.
The amazing thing is that I had never been convinced that anyone had actually disrespected the flag to this moment. I think that might be seriously the most disrespectful
really
thing you can do.
It's really bad, man. All right. Last one from Carrie. She says, I wanted to share a quick story. I sat near a bigwig in the Fortune 50 company I worked at a while ago. I'm talking, he was way up the organizational chart and making about 10 times what I did. Eventually, we realized we're both huge NBA fans and started talking hoops all the time. Before the start of last season, he made the assumption that I was into fantasy, which I'm not. Without even knowing if I was in a league, he asked if he could join Mind. Panicked, I said, for sure. I didn't even have friends who were in a league for him to join, so I had to make one up with me and 6 fake accounts. It was awful and super time-consuming. Luckily, he had to back out after last year, so I'm off the hook for this season. So we got a lot of fantasy basketball stories in the wake of our brief foray into fantasy hoops over the last couple weeks, but this was by far the best. Shout out to Carrie going the extra mile for her career, and I'm speechless that she really did all that, but I'm also very impressed.
Yeah, two takes. First, I mean, Carrie could be a guy. You've had this problem before with the the gender name. So, Carrie, shout out to you if you're a man or a woman. Congratulations. Second take, do you think with all these fake accounts and the stakes of, like, the boss being in on it, that he or she, Carrie, tanked it, sort of like all these senators that go play golf with Trump and then tell everybody how he won. I mean, do you think that she basically set up the whole league just so the boss could take first place? That's the smart move, right?
No, I don't think you create seven fake teams to then beat the boss. I think if you're going to go through all of those steps, you have to just let the big wig win at the end of everything. But
so this was the one league where Gary Harris was actually the number one pick, like you recommended.
Exactly.
The all boss right. was picking second, so they let Gary Harris go first.
All right. Yes, and I have my real fantasy draft tomorrow night, so I'll update everyone later in the week. But
Do we have a name yet? Because remember, I'm your fantasy basketball team's biggest fan.
I'll let you know. Listen, it's time for real basketball season to begin, clearly. But thank you to everyone who wrote in, especially Marcos from Puerto Rico. And we will be back on Friday to recap the first week of basketball. And until then, Ben, have a great week.
I just want to make it clear, when you tried to sell this whole podcast scheduling thing at the beginning as sort of my conflicts, that I'm not actually a diva. I'm going to go see Golden State play Houston, a game that you said you wouldn't even be interested in watching up in the Bay Area on Tuesday. Later this week, I'll have a report on that. It's so nice to have basketball back. I think you could probably tell I'm in a pretty good mood about that. Andrew, I am sorry about your Nationals, too. They couldn't quite get on level with the Dodgers.
Yo, let me tell you something.
I'm sure you weren't too surprised about that, though.
Let me be completely honest with you. I was given two tickets to the Nats game. I'm not a huge baseball fan. And that night at Nats Park, first of all, the game took 5.5 hours. Like, it was unquestionably the most depressing sporting event of my life. Like, the DC Sports finds new and creative ways to just torture you. And
coming on the heels of Kelly Olynyk, that's saying a lot.
Honest to God, I may not go to another baseball game for like the next 3 or 4 years.
Ever?
I'm good. I would swear off the sport for life, but there's a lot of good food at Nats games, so I'll go eventually. But I need a break from me and the Nats.
Yeah, if you're gonna boycott a sport, boycott the NFL, anyways. All right, Andrew. Good news is basketball's back.
Yeah, basketball Tuesday. Is getting here at the right time. That's the takeaway. All right, man. I'll talk to you later in the week.
We'll have some great overreactions later this week. Until then, 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. It's so easy to give us those 5-star now. It's great. Openfloormail@gmail.com. It's flooding. I mean, our inbox is just out of control. I love it. Until later this week, Andrew, I'll talk to you.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.